Welcome, everyone. You're listening to the Enlightened Love, Heart and Soul Show, and I'm your host, Crystalline Goldenheart. And today we have a very special guest, Jennifer Elizabeth Masters, and she's going to be talking about her greatest challenges and the wisdom she gained from each challenge and the gifts that she received. Jennifer Elizabeth Masters is a healer's healer and modern-day mystic. Having healed codependency, tremendous trauma from childhood, fibromyalgia, breast cancer, an autoimmune disease, depression, anxiety, she now lives in a state of profound knowing, never lonely or lost any longer. She was invited by Wayne Dyer to work on him during a health crisis and many other spiritual leaders and highly successful world-renowned leaders. She bilocated in 2012 and continues to astound others with profound guidance. Jennifer is an international best-selling author, channel, certified love and happiness coach, hypnotherapist, and also reads the Akashic Records, and is also a master energy healer, ordained minister, and mother of three spiritually grounded adults. For over a decade, Jennifer has empowered thousands of women to find love, passion and happiness in their lives and relationships, helping them heal codependency, addictions, depression, anxiety and suicidal tendencies, fears and suffering. Jennifer's personal healing journey from trauma has taken her all around the world. So welcome, Jennifer. It's so lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Crystalline. I am delighted. I'm so happy to be here.
That's wonderful. So Jennifer is going to be talking about her greatest challenges, and these are going to be featuring and including how her path, you know, doesn't, how our past really doesn't define us, and why we get stuck in the story of pain, finding joy no matter what, and life is meant to be fun and experiential, and why trusting ourselves is paramount to living a full, fun and powerful life, and what finding our soul purpose does for us, and the real meaning of love conquers all. Wow, that is awesome. That is so wonderful. I'm so excited to hear these wonderful stories. And you've certainly been through the mill. You've experienced, it's almost like you've experienced, Jennifer, a whole encyclopedia book of traumas. So you're well qualified in terms of, you know, it's like you've got a degree in life, and I think that's the best degree you can ever have.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because I was raised, you know, my parents were, you know, through the Depression, and my father, you know, was in the war. And so my parents are older. And my mother actually was an orphan at five, raised by a Victorian Ukrainian grandmother. So my mother was sort of, I would say, backward controlling. And so there were so many different things that happened, so many levels of, as you could say, trauma. But what happens, what happens is, you know, and for years I was stuck in it. I was stuck in that story, and I realized, what happened was when I would tell the story over to everybody, you know, to anyone who would listen, all these things happened to me. And we do this because we want people to, I guess we want to be acknowledged. We want to be validated. We want to be loved. And what I was going to say is I was raised to get married and get my MRS degree. And so I did that a multitude of times, jumping from relationship to relationship, thinking that would be the answer to this misery that I was in. So, and so we all have trauma. Everybody does on this planet, whether it's in childhood or in adulthood. Everybody experiences some sort of trauma, but we're not supposed to get caught up in the story of it.
Yes, and I'm sure many of our listeners will be able to really deeply resonate with the traumas that you've experienced and your journey in life. So I'm really excited to hear about your experiences, but also how you overcame them and what was you know, the divine wisdom that you gained and the gifts that you received from each challenge.
Okay, so what happens is we have trauma, and then we tell the story over and over and over again. And during that process, most of us don't recognize that what we say creates. Mm. We don't realize when we're in our 20s and in our 30s that what we think and what we say creates tomorrow and the next day.
Yes.
And the next day. And so the more that I focused on being a victim, the more that I focused on being small and hurt and betrayed, the more those things continued to happen to me. And, of course, I kept blaming the people in my life, from my parents to the people I was in relationship with. And so then the next step is, and I think a lot of the listeners will be able to relate to this one, then if we don't pay attention to what's going on, you know, that we don't really start listening to our bodies, our body becomes louder and louder.
Yes.
And so when I was 21, I had bladder neck surgery because I'd had so many bladder infections. And so a bladder, it relates to being angry, or as we like to say, being pissed off.
I just about to say that, yes.
and so, but here's the thing, and I can laugh about it now, but back then, if you told me I was angry, I would have said, no, I'm not angry. But, you know, my body kept showing me that my mind and my body were not in congruence. I wasn't loving myself. I wasn't loving my body. And so my body was showing me. And eventually the illnesses got so great in my 30s. I had sinus infections. My eardrum ruptured spontaneously. I had blood trickling down my ear and my neck, like all of a sudden. So all these things started to happen. And so then I started going to doctors, and I went to doctor after doctor after doctor. I had fibromyalgia, and I had pain and all sorts of stuff. And
hello, are you still there, Jennifer? Hello? I think we've just lost connection here. I'm sorry about this. Jennifer, are you still there? I can still see that you're on the line, but we can't hear you. Okay, so Jennifer has just come off the line just to reconnect. It's really interesting how when the energy is really high and we're talking about something very powerful, that suddenly it's reflected in terms of the connection, like can suddenly sort of disconnect, or it's suddenly because the energy is too high.
I am here.
Oh, right. Okay. I just was explaining because we lost you. So I was just explaining that, you know, when you're talking, when you have a really sort of high energy and you're talking about these really powerful things, that sometimes the connection can go. So can you just, like, because we all missed the last probably 5 minutes. So can you sort of share about, you know, about fibromyalgia and breast cancer and depression, anxiety? I'm sure a lot of our listeners can resonate with that.
Well, one of the things that I noticed, and I'm going to keep my answers short, so if you lose me, you can just kind of bring me back. One of the things I noticed was I wasn't breathing deeply. And everybody, just notice, are you holding your breath?
Yes.
Because that's one of the first signs that we have low self-esteem. And
really?
I didn't
know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. So here's the thing, is that breath, this is a very profound statement. I've never heard anyone else equate this to breath. Yeah. But breath connects us with our divinity.
Oh, I love that. That's so beautiful.
So
if you're not breathing properly, you're then you're not connected to your divinity or yourself.
Right. And you're not affirming life.
Oh, I see.
So just pause and breathe for a moment, because I was so disconnected from myself. I went and studied the tarot. I needed to have answers, and I was doing, you know, 6 and 8 tarot readings for myself a day. And then when I asked my higher self, what was I to use for divining and getting answers? I was told nothing. I said, nothing? Nothing. You will use nothing. And I was like, what? No cards? No crystal ball? No, nothing. And that's exactly what I do today. You know, I get my information. It just floats through. You know, we're drinking that consciousness, divine mind consciousness, as we inhale. And so when you inhale, you're affirming life, you're breathing into the present, and you're becoming grounded in your body. And what I didn't realize was I was so out of my body because of the trauma, the sexual trauma. I was so afraid to be in my body. I hated myself so much that I couldn't be in my body. I had so much shame, so much guilt. And of course, I've healed all that. I've let it go. And I've forgiven. We've got to forgive everybody that's hurt us, including ourselves.
Yes.
Starting with us. So, but what happened for me was the illnesses became so profound that I could no longer ignore them. And when I started to look at all the books, all the self-help books, Louise Hay and Drs. Balkenbach, the Prescription for Nutritional Healing, I read that book so many times, I ended up getting 3 different copies of it. And Louise Hay's book, I think I got 4 of hers. And Louise talks to me now from time to time. I always wanted to meet her. So she's such a beautiful being. Yes. So Louise Hay, when I started reading, oh, what causes a bladder infection? Oh, it's being pissed off, being angry.
Yeah.
Oh, what causes sinus infection? Well, it's a combination of things. It's anger that you feel like you don't have a right to have, but it's also tears that are uncried, not crying.
Oh.
And for the longest time, I was so blocked, so stuck that I couldn't even cry. I couldn't feel. I was numb. And I know a lot of people that have had sexual trauma become numb. And the numbness can happen because we're afraid to feel our emotions because they are so powerful.
Mm.
But all of the things that happen in our body happen, and this is what I discovered, and this is the big aha that I got. My thoughts were killing me.
Wow, that's a really powerful statement.
Yeah. But now I create with my thoughts. Because so each of us has our divinity is within us. So that makes us each a creator. And when you breathe that in and then recognize, oh, thought is within me, that makes me a creator. That makes all the thoughts I think like a prayer. So when you think about all the things that we think about in a day, and all those things that you really wouldn't want God to know, God knows. So God hears everything. That's why God hears everything, because God is within us. You can't hide anything from someone that's inside you.
Yes, I love how you say, and I am taking notes because I want to sort of share with our listeners if they don't actually, they're not on live, how all our thoughts are like a prayer. It is, it's like a divine prayer, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, that's that's just so powerful.
So self-love is the most powerful thing that we can do for ourselves, our country, our world, and for world peace. Because if we are not at peace with ourselves, if we're feeling hatred towards our ex, if we're feeling hatred towards our parents, our children, our teachers, or our landlady or landlord, I mean, how can you possibly be in a state of love? You cannot. They're on opposite ends of the spectrum. And so if you feel hate, if you feel unforgiveness, you're not in a state of love. When you're not in a state of love, you cannot create. You cannot manifest.
Yes, because it's blocking that divine flow, isn't it? And that divine energy to create.
Yeah. Pardon me.
Is that your dog?
That's my little dog, Yoda. Sorry about that.
Yoda, yes. So
one of the things, so that now that he's come into the scene, I will just say, St. Patrick's Day. Oh, there's a hummingbird outside my window.
Oh, that's wonderful, isn't it? I love to look up the symbolism of it, because it's always symbolic, isn't it? There's always a metaphysical like sign. If you see like an animal or bird or an insect, what does that represent for you, the hummingbird, and then Yoda starts barking? Because I think it's reflecting something, isn't it?
it's funny because this hummingbird is on the fence. There are horses in this field outside my window, and there's not a flower right here, but it's joy.
Wow.
Joy is what hummingbirds represent.
Yes, you can feel the joy. Yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful.
That is beautiful. I love those signs.
What I want to say about pets are amazing. I had a cat once. Her name was Lydia, and I actually have a video, Lydia the Magic Cat. It's on YouTube.
Oh, we'll have to look that one up.
she used to be on my desk. I did something like 3,000 clearings in this particular, I don't know, 6 or 8 month time period. And she got really sick. I now do not allow my cats to be on my desk when I'm doing energy work, because they absorb it. That's what they naturally do. But so she was a healer. She did Reiki on my clients while I was working on them. And so that video is of her doing Reiki. She would do it to the door and the door would open. Oh, yeah. She was amazing. But what I want to say is she helped me recognize, because I kept attracting men that were emotionally unavailable. And we recognize things and patterns and programs in other people. And when we point a finger at someone else, we have got to recognize that if we're attracting someone that is emotionally unavailable, that we must be also, because we attract what we are.
Yes, or at some level you're not sort of connected to your emotions, or you're not allowing yourself to feel them or express them.
Right. Well, and you know, when we've had a lot of pain, when we've been hurt, when we've been betrayed, what we do is we protect ourselves and we close down our heart. You know, some of us have got concrete walls in front of our heart. And of course, all those emotions that are unprocessed, It's like a vacuum cleaner. If you've vacuumed your house up and then you pull out the filter, take a look at what that filter looks like and all the stuff you've vacuumed. Imagine that sitting in the back of your heart chakra.
Wow. Yeah.
Because that's where it goes. It goes to the back of the heart chakra. So wanting to open our hearts, and that was something I focused on for years and years. How can I open my heart? Well, the fastest way to open your heart is to be in a state of love, and that means loving ourselves first. We always have to begin with ourselves first.
Yeah, that's like a sort of continuous journey, isn't it? And it's a shame that we're not taught that when we're, you know, when we're at school, because it's the most important lesson in life, really, is to master that, master loving yourself, because then you keep going to higher levels of self-love and acceptance as well.
Right, right. And we're taught, actually, to focus on ourselves is selfish. That's what we're
yes.
taught. So,
yes,
so
yeah.
In my Happy Anywhere book that I am just now, I'm chopping it right now. It's being cut to half of what it was. So I'm working on, and believe me, as an author, one of the things that I have a really hard time with is letting go of words, because I love my words. but the
yeah.
thing of it is that we've got to love ourselves. We've got to put ourselves first, but we've been taught things are backwards and upside down. And when we're taught backwards, how can we expect to have it right when we're taught the wrong way?
Yes, we're also taught to sacrifice ourselves as well. I think particularly if you're a woman, you know, years ago, I think, or you learn to sort of sacrifice yourself and put your, especially I think if you're a mother as well, to put
yes.
your needs on hold, and really to put yourself on hold, your needs on hold, and your life on hold for your children.
Well, that takes me to another issue, and I don't know whether you planned on going there, but sex and sexuality.
I just got to follow my guidance.
It's all part of who we are, and part of loving ourselves is being able to express ourselves in our sexual form. I mean, we were not given this physical body for no reason. We were given it to use it and express ourselves in our highest potential, and that means sexually as well. How many of us, because this was the reason I wrote Orgasm for Life, I was told to write that book, and I remember I was standing in my kitchen in Boulder, Colorado, 2012 in January 14th to be exact, and I heard
yeah.
in my head, write a book about sex, and I said, what? What? Because I was doing a program, Love Yourself Fearlessly, and God said to me, this is part of self-love. You have to love yourself completely, every bit of yourself. How many of us have thought being celibate was bringing us closer to God, and yet, who created sex anyway?
Yes, I'll have to sort of share that with our listeners about your book, the details of it. I'll have to look that one up myself as well. So I think that's wonderful, Orgasm for Life.
and
share
it's
more
actually,
about that book.
it's funny, actually. The book is funny and it's insightful and it's channeled. But that book, it's I have two business cards. I have one that I hand out to most people, and then the people that I know will be open to it, I'll hand out my Orgasm for Life card. And people's faces light up when I give them that card. So anyway, I wanted to talk about that because for so long I sacrificed myself and I was non-orgasmic into my 50s. And how many of us, it's all about pleasing our partner. It's all about doing for our kids and doing for others. Oh, it's okay, honey. I'll be all right. You know, and how often do we do that? And then we diminish ourselves. We diminish our needs and we diminish who we are. And to be fully standing in our goddess power is to be fully functional, not just parts of us. All of us, all the chakras open, everything flowing beautifully. As I was saying to a client just a little while ago, be flexible and flowing.
Yes, I completely agree. That's so important, really, to be in that divine flow. And I think it's you know, to really connect to yourself, because I learned myself that you know, the most painful abandonment is not when a parent leaves or anything really. The most painful abandonment and disconnection really is when you abandon yourself and disconnect from yourself. And I think that can cause depression, anxiety, loneliness, and really deep sadness. And I think it's really important to learn to really connect to yourself, isn't it? Connect to your heart, connect to your whole being.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought us back to that abandonment piece, because, you know, until I completely loved myself, and I can't tell you exactly when it happened, but what I suddenly started to notice was the pain in my body was no longer there, that I was feeling causeless joy, you know, joy for no reason. It would just bubble up and flow through me. I wasn't having bladder infections anymore. I didn't have sinus infections anymore. And I wasn't depressed or anxious any longer. So the first thing is to breathe deeply, connect with yourself, bring yourself fully into your body. Because I used to think, I want to be close to God. And I thought, being out there, out in the ethers, out in the heavens. But no, God is within us. And when we recognize that, everything changes.
Yes. And I'd love to hear, I mean, this is just so really fascinating to hear. And I can relate to some of the things you're saying. But when you had breast cancer, was that, you know, because I remember reading Louise Hay and sort of, hearing about that. I'd had friends that have breast cancer, and then I had a lump once. Is it to do with where you haven't, like, sort of mothered yourself and nurtured yourself? Is it about nurturing and cherishing yourself? Tell us about that journey.
It is all of those things. Plus, if we have a tendency to overmother our children, if we have a tendency to be domineering. And my mother and father were both domineering. And so I became the domineering parent as well, because I, you know, we model what our parents teach us. And until I started to shift myself and change the way I parented my kids, and I was so totally different with my third, and actually my last child, my daughter, helped me in tremendous ways. She helped me recognize so much, because she would call me out on my own stuff.
She sounds really powerful and very insightful.
she
pressed your buttons.
She was born awake, and I remember at age 7, we were in a tub bath together. And she's just floating, you know, in the water, kind of like on top of me and facing the other direction. And I just am talking to her, and I said, you know, I'm thinking of going back with your father. And she says to me, don't you remember? And she starts to recount these incidences of horrible abuse. Don't you remember this at 7? Don't you remember that? Don't you remember how he did this to you? And then she said, I know you think I'm a little girl, but inside me is a grown up.
Oh my God, that's amazing, isn't it? That's really powerful. That would also freak me out, I think, as a mother. I'd be thinking, oh my God. What did you think and feel at the time when she said that? Was you sort of obviously blown away? And
well, I recognized she was channeling.
I know, I was just about to say she was channeling.
Absolutely. Yeah. So she was recounting all these things. So anyone that's had abuse, we often tuck those things away into the dark recesses of our unconscious mind and lock the key and throw the key away. And then we don't remember them. And then we think those people are going to be different. You know, we keep going back to the well thinking, oh, my mother will be different. Even if she's got borderline personality and schizophrenia and she's a narcissist, every time you go visit, you know she's not different. But when you're away from them and you start painting this pretty picture of who they are, But then when you go back and you see them, and the same thing, so many people go back to the same well expecting people to be different, and they're not.
Yeah.
So that's where we have to, and so my daughter actually prevented me from going back with her own father. So, I mean, I made the decision, of course, inevitably, but her channeling that day, and the reason I describe it the way I do, because I remember exactly where I was in that moment in that rental house in Georgia. It was so profound, so profound.
Yeah, because if she was channeling, it would have gone, you know, deep into your heart, wouldn't it? And,
right.
And into your soul.
Right.
It's almost like the words were imprinted. It's like she imprinted you.
Right. The other thing that I noticed in anyone that has children, especially young children, whatever you are going through, your children feel it. They really do. My daughter was so connected to me so that if I was upset, she would end up with a migraine.
Wow. I think some parents think like if they don't show, you know, if they hide, they don't sort of show their children that they're upset. They hide their tears that their children don't know and don't feel it. But they do. It's all about the energy, isn't it? Sort of,
yes.
So unconscious.
Well, especially children up to the age of 7, because that's where they're still really connected, you know, to God. And I remember her saying to me, Mom, I forget what it's like to be with God and in heaven, and I want to go back there. She was sick at the time. And I said, oh, honey, no, you don't want to go back there. But, you know, she's 22 now, and beautiful, beautiful girl. And her father passed away, and I wanted to share some of this with you because I predicted his death. We both were living in Georgia separately, and within 2 weeks, after living in Georgia for almost 30 years, we both left Georgia within 2 weeks of each other, because we were both guided to do so. And he moved to North Dakota, and when he told me he was going there, I was very concerned. And I said, I'm really concerned about you going there. And he said to me, well, I checked with, and I won't tell you who it was. I checked with this particular healer in Georgia, and she said it would be okay. But I had a real dark, deep feeling that he was going to die there, and he did.
But you can't run away from death, though, can't you? Can you? Because I remember my mother would say to me as a child, you know, it's kismet. You know, when it's your time, it's up, you can't run away. It will, you know, find you.
He was 52. He wasn't sick. And he came to me that night after, you know, he had crossed over or he was transitioning. And he said to me, they're going to say I had a heart attack, which I did not. A door simply opened and I walked through. And so I just want to touch base on that because 2 years later, when I found the breast lump, I had this overwhelming feeling. It felt like a download. I was getting a download. I had to go to bed. So it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I laid down to take a nap, and I fell asleep into this like dark coma, almost like it was so black. So you know when you go to sleep and you're just sort of in that twilight, it was this deep black sleep. And as I started to lift out of that sleep, I was in that twilight, that in between, and in this dreamy state, I was walking down the tunnel of light, and I was floating, not walking, because.
Wow.
So I'm floating down the tunnel of light, and I could feel I had two beings on either side of me. And I knew then that this was what Rich had just gone through 2 years prior, that they will walk you through the tunnel of light when you get to the other side. Well, you're on the other side. And so I was thinking, oh, they're going to show me what it's like, because in my dream state, I often was taken to different places to see, you know, what it's like before, you know, before we incarnate. what happened during that time. Well, so my daughter was out on the couch in the living room, and I said, well, they must be just showing me what it's like. And I could tell they didn't agree. They didn't speak, but I could tell that the two beings were not in agreement. And I said to them, well, what about Ariel? She doesn't have a father. She can't not have a mother too. And as soon as I said that, I was just backed out swiftly out of the tunnel.
Wow.
So in response to it's kismet, yes and no. There are exit points that we all have, and usually there's about five of them. And they're at various places throughout our life timeline. And that's one of the things that I can clear for people, and I do if they wish. So when we wipe out those, then you choose when you want to go, as opposed to having five or six different exit points. So that was an exit point for me. And then I want to talk about the breast cancer. So when I found the lump, I talked to my daughter about it, and I said, but I've done so much work, and I know I love myself. I know I accept myself. Mm-hmm. And we looked at each other, and I said, well, what else do I have to do? And simultaneously, she said, grandma, and I said, my mom.
So,
you know, my mom was, and that's the thing. Our mothers are, I would say, the most profound piece of our puzzle of life. And
I completely agree with you, especially with the birth journey and the way you're carried in the womb and how you're born. It does determine how you live and experience your life and your divine blueprint for life.
So if our mothers were molested, we will most likely be also. And so it goes until we clear that karma and we clear the generational pattern, so which I've done. But my mom was a real tough cookie. She was cruel. She was critical. I didn't feel loved, and I wasn't protected. I was put in harm's way. I was molested by four different people, and she didn't seem to care. But it wasn't that she didn't care, but not until I did a rebirthing process through the Akashic Records and went back in and looked at how she felt about me and how she felt about herself, healed her, because she did not feel happy with herself. Her parents left when she was five. She was abandoned at five. So she didn't have the nurturing she needed to be able to nurture a child. So we've got to have compassion and forgiveness for our mothers, for whatever it is. And we choose our mother. We may not choose anyone else in our life play, but we do choose our mothers. And when my daughter was talking to me about this, she said to me, I picked you, Mom, to be my mother. I didn't want Dad, but he was the only option available. So it has to do with what the options are. But our mother is profound in our soul's journey, and to be healed and whole, we cannot run away from our relationship with our mothers. We must heal it.
Yes, I completely agree. Because I've healed relationship with my mother, and the birth journey was very traumatic. And when I went back into the womb, and I didn't realize that the way you are in your mother's womb, and then the way you are born, will actually affect the way you live your life and how you experience it. You know, whether you hold on tight or you control yourself or you try and stay small or you don't feel safe. And you also make some vows, I think, when you're in the womb, obviously to keep you safe. So, you know, I completely agree. And I'm sure, you know, some of our listeners will also agree with that about the relationship with your mother. I think it's very important. You know, they talk about the core mother wound, don't they?
Yes. It's huge. Now, I'm not saying that our dads aren't important. They are too.
Yeah.
And recognizing what they both have given us. You know, my mother is still living, and she lives in Canada. I'm actually going to visit her next week for her 96th birthday.
Wow. So when you had breast cancer, after you healed, you know, those wounds with your mother and that relationship, is that when the breast cancer went, or did it start to go? What was
yes? So more? Yes. So we have the power to heal our bodies. We can heal sinus infections, and just like manifesting, it doesn't matter if you're manifesting $1, $10, or $1 million. We all have the ability to do so, and you use the same process no matter what. So the same goes for healing the body. So we have to love, approve, and forgive ourselves first, and then we have to go forgive our you know, talk to our inner child, let them know we love them, forgive ourselves in front of the inner child, merge with our inner child. These are all processes that I do with my clients, and then. So what I had to do was forgive my mother some more. I had done so much work with her, but see, because she has borderline personality disorder, and so she could be totally fine and happy outside the door. It's kind of like that mommy dearest type of persona.
I found that really scary, that movie, when I was younger.
It's scary, but that's my mom. And so she may be perfectly fine and lovely with strangers, and then close the door and turn around, and then this horrid, cruel person shows up, and she doesn't recognize it, and she has a way of saying things, and it could be two words, like "you're late."
It's the energy that she says it in, isn't it? It could feel like a knife, really, just those words. Yeah.
Well, 3 years ago,
I can feel it.
3 years ago, she said those two words to me, and I was back in my 14-year-old body. It was like I just traveled back through time, and believe me, I've done 30 and more years of work. And my mother can still touch me in that way. Now, since that time, in this past 3 years, I've done so much more work. And that's the thing I hear all the time. Oh, I've done all this work. I've done all this work. I shouldn't have these things coming up. And why not?
I'm guilty of that. I've said that a few times. I've done like 30 years of work, over 30, and I feel that sometimes, I'm guilty.
Well, it's never ending, because we are such complex individuals, and so many things happen. And if somebody triggers us, it's not their fault, it's our issue. So if we get angry because somebody says something, or we have a residual feeling within the body, it's because there's still that fight. It's hard for me to say this, fight, fright, or flee mechanism is embedded in it. And so we have to go back into that time frame, and we have to heal it, release it, breathe through it. We can't keep running away from these things, because they will continue to surface. And how will they? So you think that you're ready for a divine partner, so you attract this beautiful partner, and then he says something to you and it triggers you because it sounds exactly like your mother. And all of a sudden the Dr. Jekyll comes out, or the Mr. Hyde, whichever, which one it is. So that's the thing, is that if we're triggered by someone else, it's because we've got those issues.
I completely agree. Whenever someone triggers me, I just think, okay, what's going on within me? What is it that I need to look at or to release or to heal? I see it as a gift, really.
Yes, it's all a gift.
It is all a gift, isn't it? It's like, yeah. You know, I would imagine you'd probably say that, which would probably be difficult to hear for some people, is that, you know, the fibromyalgia took you on a journey and taught you a lot, and so did breast cancer, and so did the trauma, you know, and the depression, anxiety as well. Well, I'd love you to share more about depression, anxiety, because I know a lot of people and some of our listeners, a lot of people experience that on the spiritual path, especially when either they're just about to awaken or they have awoken and they've awoken for years, keep awakening and maybe on the ascension path. And, you know, I remember on my spiritual path, it's like, oh, just heal it with love and light. Oh, just, you know, it's all about love and light. But I never sort of heard about that part about when you abandon yourself, because, you know, sometimes on that spiritual path, you abandon yourself because you want to, like you said, go up above and not in your body, and you can't heal anything really completely really until you are in your body. So can you share more about that?
that's an excellent direction here. Okay.
Thank you.
So when we end up with a physical illness, it is because we haven't done the inner work. We haven't released the emotions. And most people, and I recently worked with a woman who kept saying, well, I've got all this, I'm not sick, and I've been to all these doctors, you know, spent thousands and thousands of dollars on doctors trying to find out what's wrong with her. And meanwhile, it's just energy. And so if you get upset and you stuff it, you don't speak your truth, you don't say what's in your mind and heart, and you know, you might be been married to somebody for 20 or 30 years, you know, the goal might be, I want to get out of this marriage so that I don't have to deal with this person anymore. But the truth is, you've got to stay in the marriage, because who is it that's going to be the one that will hear your truth? Because you could go out in the world and attract someone else, and you still can't speak your truth. So
you're
stay
still
where you're
the same
at.
Person, won't you? Yeah,
you're the same. So we've got to stay and face ourselves instead of, and I all the time, I get people that are trying to escape. They're trying to escape from their bodies, and then they become numb. And believe me, I had all that stuff. I was totally numb. And the numbness is from not experiencing our emotions. Like, as a little child, you know, I don't know if you were told this, but I was. Stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about.
Yes, and also that, you know, you need to be strong. You know, like it was like weak to cry.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember in my family, I'll be honest, they definitely didn't do emotions.
well, you are British, right?
Yeah, I think, and I remember, I feel guided to share this. I've shared it before, I think, on the show, but my father used to say to me when I was a child, he used to say he had a heavy heart. And I used to wonder, what does he mean, a heavy heart? Does he mean it weighs a lot? And then when I became an adult, I realized what he meant, because when he said he had a heavy heart, it was because it was filled with so much sadness and grief. He'd lost so many people, but they weren't, you know, he didn't learn as a family, you know, that it's okay to cry. You had to be strong. And
well,
so, yes, he definitely suppressed his emotions. And I think that, you know, manifested into heart disease and then to cancer when he passed.
Okay. So let's just stay there for a moment. And I'm really sorry to hear about your dad. And what he experienced. What I will say about that is, because I met my twin flame. We had 3 amazing months together, and he died.
Oh,
right after. But he didn't just die. He died right after sex, like immediately after sex. He said to me, "I love you. I'll never leave you." And then he slid off the couch and onto the floor. And
oh my God, was that before you wrote your book or after you wrote that book then about orgasm?
Oh, it was before. Mm-hmm. It was
oh,
actually,
wow,
that was before
really
my first book. I wrote about if you want to hear about it, it's in my first book, Odyssey, Victim to Victory. It's a beautiful story. But here's the thing. I had a friend who did acupuncture, and he came over right away. And he said to me, Jennifer, you have so much grief. And even now, thinking about it, it's been 9 years. Even now when I think about it, because I loved him so much, I'd never experienced that depth of love before. Because he accepted me as I was. It was the first man that I was ever with that accepted me as I was. And I want you to hear this, because why was he in my life? To show me what it felt like to be accepted.
And that was just that. That's wonderful. I mean, so it was that was only for 3 months. So that's so sad that it was for only 3 months.
Right. Well, typically, that's how long twin flames are not meant to be a forever thing. And I can hear people getting up in arms about this.
I think it's forever.
No, twin flames are they're no, not forever. But what I want to talk about is the emotion. So he put needles in my heart and said, if I didn't do this, you could have had a heart attack. I had so much of a block in my heart. And I'll tell you, so in 2012, when my daughter's dad passed away, he passed away July the 4th, 2012. Within 22 days, my best friend Diana died. She was going through chemo. And then I think 28 days later, one of my dearest friends, the three of us were dear friends, Joanne passed away. So I lost three people in very short order.
That's multiple grief, isn't it? I mean, you can't cope with that multiple grief. It's just
what's interesting, though, I want to say they all came back to tell me we're not dead.
Oh.
Because every time I spoke of them, Joanne and Diana together, because we did our energy work together. We did our coursework together in 2007. And so they would come back and we're not dead. So when someone passes away, all they do is move out of the physical form, but they are not gone. Their consciousness lives. It is spirit that we come in as and spirit that we remain. Spirit never, ever dies. And that's what Jesus was meant to teach us, that each of us lives after the body is no longer.
I completely agree with that, because I remember when my mother passed, it's like she passed before she officially sort of passed, if that makes sense. I remember I was out in the garden of the hospital with my son, and I suddenly looked up and it was a sunny day, and she was obviously in the hospital bed, but it was out in the garden of the hospital, looked up and into the sky, and I saw her there, and she said, it's okay, darling. She said, I've gone now. And she said how much she loved us all. And then when about 2 hours later, that's when she passed. And then when I saw her, I didn't sort of see that as her, if that makes sense. It just looked like a shell or a body. But I felt such comfort that she'd actually said goodbye before she actually officially left.
You know, I am not equating a dog with a human. I'm not going to do that. But I will say.
Dogs. I really see their beautiful heart. I love dogs.
My dog, Karma, I got her when she was 2.5. She was a rescue. Yeah. And I had her for 18 years. And I was just about to go to Colorado. This was, I was leaving St. Patrick's Day. And she was 21 in her 21st year. And I, at either place, whether it was my daughters or my sons, there were a great number of stairs. And I was wondering, how on earth is Karma going to be able to walk up those stairs? And I knew she couldn't do it. And so Friday night, she vomited blood, and because we had an agreement, no Herculean attempt to keep her alive, and she communicated this with me. So I knew she was telling me, this is your sign, you know.
Yeah.
So, but what I want to say is, so that dog and I had such a relationship, and I want to get back to the pets, because pets are so powerful in our healing process. So I took her to the vet. I was with her when they euthanized her. And then I carried her in my car to the crematorium, and I took her there because I honored her. You know, I didn't want anyone else to do that. So I took her and honored her. As I'm leaving the crematorium, it's just me in the car, but I was talking to her spirit in the car. And I was telling her how grateful I was, how much she gave me, what a beautiful girl she was, how she showed me what love meant. And all of a sudden, I heard and felt whoosh as her soul left my car.
Wow.
I felt it. Yeah.
Mm.
Because her spirit was in the car, you know, it wasn't in the body anymore. But I felt her spirit leave. And so, yes, we are spirit. We absolutely are. And so as such, we've got to revere our bodies. We've got to take good care of it. We have to love it. And I want to talk about this piece because we can manifest ill health or we can manifest vital health. And how we do that is the quality of our thoughts.
Mm.
So if we...
I deeply agree with you. Yes.
if we talk about I'm sick and we put the word my in front of any illness or disease, we are owning it. And I highly recommend that you do not own any disease or illness because it will become you. And we are meant to be vitally healthy. And the way we do that is by loving ourselves and affirming, I am vitally healthy. My body is perfect for me. I'm at my perfect weight. I'm healthy, whole, and vibrantly healthy. So if we are saying those things, even if they're not true in this moment, our unconscious mind, which is the only part of our mind that is always, always active. See, unconscious is the only part of our mind that is always active, even in our sleep. So what we say to ourselves out loud and silently is what creates and governs. And we create our beliefs with what we say, and the beliefs are governing. So I believe that my body is vibrantly healthy. My mother, 96, how did she get to be 96? I've got a story for you because she's never had a mammogram. She's never had cancer.
Wow.
She goes, oh, goodness, I'm healthy. I'm as healthy as a horse. And she continues to affirm, I'm as healthy as a horse. And she is. Now, at 96, is she as horse-like as she used to be? No, she's slowing down. She is. You know, her body is, you know, is in its last. And she talks about death all the time. She says to me, well, when you come to visit me, Jennifer, you'll have to go to church with me so you can so you'll recognize everybody at my funeral. So it's not something that's dire or sad, or for her it's like, well, it's gonna happen, and I'm closer to that than I am to anything else.
I really do believe about, like, our thoughts manifest either, you know, vibrant health or really sort of I don't say bad health, but yes, because I remember with my mother, she would always rush around nonstop. And I remember after she'd had a few strokes. She's passed, you know, about 7 years ago, and she said, "Oh, isn't it a shame that the only way I could slow down was by having this stroke, and the only way I could let people do things for me and to receive," she said, because she was so was always on the go, always fast, and always sort of, So I've learned from, like, the ill health of my parents and relatives to really look after my body. But I think there's so many different levels to loving and honouring your body, because I feel that once you've reached one, you're shown another one. You think, wow, I thought I was loving and honouring and cherishing my body, but there's another aspect that I need to shift into, you know, like a higher timeline or something, you know. But it, again, we're not taught that to love our bodies because we're taught that that's vain.
I'd like to talk about how we create cancer.
Yes, that would be very good if you do that.
Okay. So my father was a gardener, taught me a lot about gardening, and I ended up having a landscape business. And one of my brothers is a farmer. The other two were gardeners. But he also taught me a lot about spirituality. And he would read books, and he'd come home, and he'd talk about Edgar Cayce and the Lost Continent of Mu all kinds of things like that. And he taught me to not believe everything I read or hear, which I think is really important. But he would come home after work, and he'd talk about what he'd read in the newspaper because he had lots of spare time, and he did a lot of reading. So he'd come home, and he'd be sitting at the dinner table, and he'd be talking about the latest discovery of cancer. Oh, you know, they're saying that bacon causes cancer and peanut butter causes cancer. And so I just want you to hear what I'm saying. He's sitting down eating at the table, imbuing his food with the words cancer.
Yes.
And eating the food, and food circulates in your body for at least 8 hours, sometimes longer, before it leaves. And he ended up with leukemia. Now, my mother, on the other hand, would sit at the table and go, oh, that's nonsense. I don't believe that at all. Not for a minute do I believe it.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so they had two conflicting views, didn't they? That's just because my father had a form of leukemia. That's really interesting. Wow. How long after that did he actually contract the leukemia?
Well, I watched him for 12 years. I mean, he had started to lose weight, and they would not diagnose him with absolute leukemia until he was probably, I don't know, 2-3 years from, you know, passing. So, but apparently leukemia takes about 12 years. And, you know, he had blood transfusions and that sort of thing. And they told him that chemotherapy would not help him, but he insisted on having it. And I swear it killed him.
Yeah, I must admit, I've got strong views about chemotherapy. And I do sort of feel that I probably maybe not say my views on chemotherapy, but my father used to complain of a backache, and the doctor would just say he's got a back pain, and it turned out to be myelofibrosis, where you can have a bone marrow transplant, but he just didn't. But I think it's also because I feel personally, like from my father, that he suppressed everything, all those emotions.
Well, and that
was very negative.
I want to talk about your mom, and then I want to talk about the suppressed emotion. So I just want to just briefly touch on when you or we are always on the go, and we don't sit, and we don't rest, and we don't get in touch with nature, and we're not exercising. We've got to sit in silence. We've got to go within, and we cannot be always on the go because that is a disconnection from the self.
Yes. Yeah.
So about the emotions. Emotions are meant to move. Emotion. Emotion. So emotions are never meant to be stuffed. And when we stuff them, they create illness and then disease. So we have to get in the habit of being able to move them. And so a lot of people are afraid of feeling. And I'm working with this gentleman in New York, and he's been working on enlightenment for quite some time. And he keeps saying, it's got to get better. It's got to get better. He has so much self-judgment about what he's experiencing. And yet we have got to be in the moment appreciating it as it is, as opposed to fighting with it.
I think judgment can just, it's almost a bit like a poison judgment, so especially when we judge ourselves, and then, because then we're judging others and then other people judge us. And I feel that even if like you've cleared a lot of things, sometimes because you're still judging yourself, it sort of comes back again, keeps reminding you.
Right, absolutely. So I have two visuals that I use. One's the magnifying glass. And I talk to people, I say, well, we hold this magnifying glass over ourselves. We look at our face, look at the wrinkles on my face. Oh, look, my boobs are too small. Oh, my ass is too big. Oh, my belly's too fat. And, you know, we scrutinize every little detail and we cut ourselves to shreds or ribbons. And then we beat ourselves up with a baseball bat. And so both of those things have got to stop. We have to stop highlighting the faults and the flaws, and instead, we have to lovingly accept them. Because nobody's going to be happy with everything that they have or everything that they are.
But also, I feel like it can go back to when you're a child. I thought that if you weren't accepted as a child, or if like you were criticized, you know, for the way you look or what you do,
right.
I think it's a natural, it's almost like an imprint then, and it's sort of like you're entrained then to judge yourself, criticize yourself, beat yourself up. I remember, you know, as a child, I always felt I had to be the perfect child. I thought, if I'm the perfect little girl, and I tried really hard to be perfect.
Yeah.
You had to look perfect, you had to be perfect. And then you'll be accepted and loved. But obviously I don't do that now, but it does cause, I'm sure you can relate to this, and I'm sure, you know, some of our listeners can as well, that I think if you learnt at an early age that, you know, to judge yourself, to criticize yourself, to be hard on yourself, it is hard to just suddenly think, right, I'm just going to accept that. I think for me, it's like once you release that core trauma and core wounds, that's when it was kind of easier then to love and accept, you know.
I would agree. We have to heal the wound for sure. And then this need to be perfect. We have to know that we're okay as we are, the way we are. Mm. So, for example, you know, you all may think I'm perfect. Well, I'm not. And one of the things, you know, I'm an author, I'm a writer, but my father, although it was not diagnosed, had attention deficit. All of my kids have attention deficit. I have attention deficit. Now, do I label it and say, no, did I take medication? No, I'm just aware that my mind can go, and my father was like this. He'd be on a tangent. And then he'd be like, squirrel, and he'd be over there at the looking at the squirrel. And then something would happen over here, a bird flitting, and the next thing you know, he's talking about the bird. So I grew up with this, and then, of course, I have a tendency to be that way. I can have this laser focus, or I could be all over the place, but I really have to – you know, I've like today, I've got notes on a page to keep me on track so that when you say something, I write it down. There are ways that we can overcome our challenges and love ourselves the way we are without beating ourselves up about it. So there are things like dyslexia. That's something that it comes up every once in a while. I find myself typing words and they're backwards or inverted. It's a thing. But, you know, so we just lovingly accept it rather than try to cut that part off. We cannot cut an arm off and still exist. We can't cut a part of ourselves off and still exist. We have to accept all of us, the whole enchilada.
I think that, like, when you're in the divine flow, because I can relate to attention deficit, as you were saying, I thought, oh, my God, I think I've had that. But I had to really teach myself to have clarity, because I don't know if it's the same sort of phrase in the US, but I used to be told I was beating around the bush and I couldn't get to the point. And then I'd go off on a tangent. I'd go to this story, that story, and I'd get all excited. But I've had to teach myself to have clarity and real focus. But my son, I have to say, he really embodies clarity. So it's like if I didn't actually learn to have clarity, it would have been a very frustrating relationship. So it's like, I think you can sort of teach yourself that, or you can receive that transmission of clarity and focus.
Yeah.
But and I actually like to have clarity and focus, but I can, you know, sometimes. But I've also found, like, I'm sure you can relate to this too, is that when you're in that divine flow, you're in that present moment, you're not in your head. And so you do have that clarity and focus, but it's when you go into your head and everything else, or you're not grounded, you can quite easily go into that attention deficit disorder and different things.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. The grounding piece, and that used to be a real issue for me. It's no longer an issue. Unless my blood sugar gets really low, and then, you know, that's, of course, that physical thing. We've got to take care of our bodies because we have one. But now, see, I've lost my train of thought.
The grounding thing. The grounding thing. It sounds like I'm copying you, but for many years, I found it very, very difficult to ground myself. And I think one of the reasons was when you have trauma, it's very difficult to come into the body, but once it's released, it's much easier. But in actual fact, you do feel safer when you are in your body and grounded.
Yes.
So I'm now able to ground myself, but, like, I'm sure you've got some stories about being grounded and ungrounded, because that's so important, isn't it? It's a core foundation.
Well, we're doing landscaping and working with rock was really very transformational for me. So working with rock and dirt and trees and shrubs and hands in the dirt, that was very powerful for me. But the safe in the body piece is true. It's very important. But that's where the breath comes in. So when we're holding our breath, it's almost like I can't be here. I have to be somewhere else. So when we breathe deeply, it's allowing ourselves to fill the space, to be bigger, to fill our energy field, to be grounded in the body. And, of course, bringing that energy down through our legs, through our feet, into the center of the earth, like roots on a tree. And just visualize that. If you have a problem with it, breathing in and sending that energy down through the body into the earth, and grounding into Mother Earth, that is a great way. And I love nature. I love trees. And one of the things that I've noticed is that trees, like a certain type of tree, let's just say they're in where I'm at, Newhall, California. And I was talking to the trees a week or so ago. And I said, I love you, trees. You're so beautiful. And they said to me, we're connected with the trees in Morro Bay. So trees here communicate with trees miles away. They're community oriented. But the other thing about trees is that you could sit down with your back against one, sit on the ground, ask for the tree to take away your pain, to take away your emotions. A tree is, it's amazing how they want to help. We live in an interactive universe. Trees have consciousness and will communicate with us. The same with animals, the same, all forms of nature, the sun, the moon, the stars. If you send love to the sun and say, I love you, sun, and just stand there and wait and see what you hear back, because the sun will tell you, I love you. The stars will do the same. The moon will play with you. We live in an interactive universe. Most people don't see it because they think, oh, that's silly.
Yes, I was going to say, share, but I can't remember the name of this beautiful flower. So I think it's an orchid. And it really shouldn't have grown. It's supposed to have been dead. But it didn't just sort of blossom with just one flower. It's just so beautiful. And every time I do say, and I'll be honest, years ago I was terrible with plants. My mum used to say that I was like her and that plants never grow and all that sort of thing, that I'm not able to look after plants. And like she said, I'm not able to sew. but when I actually, you know, I do speak to the plants, but this beautiful orchid, it's just blossomed beautifully. And I say how much I love it and I do kiss it. And I would never have done that before. I would have thought I was like kooky, a bit like mental there. And I also say, you know, how much water would you like? And I put love into the water. And I look at it and it looks so beautiful. And I know when I first bought it, it certainly didn't have all those flowers. It's this beautiful cerise pink. And when it was supposed to be, not dead, but obviously there's no sort of blossoms or flowers, it just kept on sort of blossoming. And I thought, oh, wow, this is magical. It's like, but I'll be honest, like, you know, years ago, I definitely weren't very good with plants. You know, I didn't know how to, they all used to die on me.
They do communicate. I had someone recently house sit for me for my, you know, take care of my animals. And he said to me, I've never seen such sweet and loving animals. And it has to do with our energy. You know, the kinder, more loving that we are, it's what we give out is given back to us. So one of the things that I want to talk about next is how we love. So many of us give, but are blocked on the receiving end and wonder, why do I have such issues with money? It's because you're not open to receive. So love and breath, it's all ebb and flow. Money, it's all ebb and flow. We have to spend money and get money, spend money and get money. And know that when we're not wasting, we're not to waste. The universe doesn't like waste, but know that money needs to be in circulation, and holding it and hoarding it, it's like hoarding anything. Like if you've got stacks and stacks of furniture and tons of papers, that you're a hoarder and you are an emotional hoarder as well. So you are not in that state of that giving and receiving. It's ebb and flow, just like the breath. In, exhale.
Yes, because it's like fear. If you hold on to, you know, your money, or hold on to anything, it's a fear, isn't it? It's like you have this attachment, and it's, you know, just feel like you're going to lose it. And I must admit, I have done that in the past, and then it is lost. Either it's a parking fine, or some big bill, or something. So I agree, it's definitely about being in circulation, just like the breath.
Well, money is energy. It is just energy, and we're not to think of it in any other way other than energy.
So, you know, like on the spiritual part, you know, money problems and stuff, it can give people so much pain and almost sometimes make them feel suicidal or feel like they don't want to be on the path, and it can stop them evolving, stop them so many different ways, because there's also a part which thinks, well, to be spiritual is, you know, you have to not really have much money and live sort of frugally, and, you know, can you share more about that, Jennifer?
Well, that's absolutely,
have you experienced that?
Horse patuki, for sure. It's not true. Because we live in an abundant universe. And we are meant to be abundant and prosperous. Of course, generous too. Here's the thing, is that we have to be in a state of love to be able to manifest. So the fastest way to get to that place is to love ourselves. You know, to receive love, we have to be the love. To receive money, we have to feel wealthy. Because when we feel poor, then what we're doing is we're putting out there that that's what we are. And you have to be what you wish to have. So if you don't have money, you have to feel wealthy. Wear something that makes you feel wealthy. If it's, you've got a pair of fake diamonds, put them on and think of them as diamonds. But we've got to be in that state of wealth consciousness to be able to manifest more. And of course, we haven't talked about gratitude. gratitude is the fuel. It's the fuel for everything. So if we're not grateful for what we have today, whether it's the relationship we have, the house that we have, the car that we have, the health that we have, then if you're not grateful, you'll probably lose it. So to be grateful for what you have will guarantee that you will receive more. But we have to be grateful. When we're not in a state of gratitude, we are taking what we have for granted. And nobody likes that. God doesn't like it. It doesn't feel good when someone takes us for granted. So state of appreciation and gratitude will get you more.
Yes, I think it's really important. And I learned that, I remember when someone said a few years ago, it's about creating your heaven within. And I must admit, when I heard that, I thought, what a load of rubbish, because the reality wasn't that great. It was very sort of challenging.
Right.
But in the end, I did. And it was about really connecting to that feeling of being joyful and wealthy and loving yourself.
Right.
And I feel that once you do it, you start to embody it, and then you're already in training your body to feel that and experience it. And then it definitely does manifest externally. But again, I don't think we're taught that, are we? Because we feel like it's all outside, your reality's outside. But it's really, it's inside, isn't it? You create that beautiful divine heaven from within.
That's right.
Can you share more about that?
Well,
and how you've done that as well.
Well, if I was to take myself back 30 years, I felt insignificant. I was extremely codependent. I felt like I needed to have somebody in my life to feel loved because I didn't love myself enough. So I always needed someone else to complete me. And of course, I did marry somebody who, I married a guy named Bill Gates, and not my
Bill Gates. Oh.
Yes, yes. Not the same, but, of the same name. And I'll say, a name has a vibration, and he did make a lot.
I completely agree with that, yeah.
Yes. He made a lot of money. I lived in Leatherhead, Surrey there for a while. I was in England for 2 years when we were married. But when we were divorced, I thought, I'm golden. But I then started to experience money problems. I didn't have them when I was married to him because he kind of controlled the money. But after, that's when things started to surface for me, because it was me. I had the lack consciousness. I didn't feel good about me. And so the better we feel about ourselves, the more positive we feel, the more loved we feel, the more whole we feel. So all of these things lead to our thoughts. Then if we're thinking, money comes to me easily, people love to pay me money, the universe always has my back, I live in an abundant universe, nothing is ever lost, my natural state is abundant, I am abundant. If those are your predominant thoughts, you will turn around your life and your finances. But if you are constantly thinking, I don't have the money for that. I don't even like to say these words. I don't. But if we're focusing on the lack of, what we do not have, we remember what I said earlier. We are creators. Our thoughts are creative. So the words that we say are creating that energy field, and we get more of it, even if it's not having money. So we don't want to focus on what we don't have. Even if your bank account is overdrawn, even if you don't have a client today. So this is what you do. You focus on what you want to create. Money comes to me easily. People pay me money. Money always shows up in the nick of time. So for example, I've spent a lot of money recently, and so this is my mantra. Well, I'll get a new client today. Someone else will pay me today. I will have a new client. This is a temporary thing. The universe is abundant. People love to pay me money, and it shifts. it shifts. We just have to focus on what we want and focus on the solution and put the problem behind us so that we're not looking at it with that magnifying glass. So, okay, so you asked me about the feeling piece. So we also have to know and not be in fear. So you have to be in a state of faith, because fear is the opposite of faith. So if you're feeling fear, it's because you're not in faith. So the fastest way to move from fear to faith is, do you know what it is, Crystalline?
Oh, the fastest way to be in faith. Well, I think, like, if you're in your head, you can be in fear. But for me, it's coming into my heart and really connecting to the divine, connecting to joy.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. And, and feeling into what I would love to create.
So that is good, but if you're in abject fear, where some people really get anxious, then that may be difficult to do or achieve. So
yes, definitely.
So then you could start saying, "Thank you, God, for my life. Thank you, God, for my health. Thank you, God, for the roof over my head. Thank you for this $1 bill that I have, and I know more is coming. Thank you for always having my back." So you just say thank you for anything you can possibly think of. Thank you that I have eyes to see. Thank you that my hair is still on my head. Thank you that my legs work. Thank you that I have food for my animals. Thank you for this beautiful telesummit that Crystalline's invited me to. Thank you for all the listeners that are hearing me. So you see how that just, it's like this ripple effect. And the more that you start being grateful for what you have, all of that sends waves out into the universe, and the universe goes, "Oh, she's grateful. So we must give her more."
I want to sort of share, I had a powerful session with you, and I love how you call them mantras, because it's almost like you injected some magic into those mantras. Because, you know, there was years where I was doing lots of affirmations and I thought, this is a load of bullshit, this doesn't work, it was doing my head in. And then I got into it again in a different sort of way, I did EFT, and then I thought, no, it's bringing up too much stuff. But there's something about yours, I mean, you did the Akashic Record clearing with me, but there was something about you that was really magical, and something about your energy, and also the fact that if someone just says, "Oh, you know, why don't you do this?" I need to sort of feel that they completely believe and they embody that. And I think it was this transmission I received from you. And the very next morning, and ever since I had that session, which is probably, I don't know, it's 2 months now, every single day, and that's a big thing, every single day I dance to the mantras you gave me.
Ah.
And I've included some other ones. And I love dancing. I just put the music on and I just say the mantras as I'm dancing. And throughout the day I connect in, and then I put music on my dance. And that's how, you know, so I love that they're called mantras rather than affirmations, because I thought those affirmations, they can really do your head in and bring up lots of stuff. But because it's mantras and because it's like a moving meditation with the dance, I think that's how I started to really train my body and to really embody that. So I want to say, huge thank you.
Thank you. Well, dance. I'm glad you brought up dance.
I love dancing.
So we here have an app called Pandora, and you may have something like it in the UK. Pandora has, you can create a station. It could be a Billy Idol station or a David Bowie station or Eagles or the Beatles. And so when I was living in the desert, and this was not very long ago, I lived in the desert. I was living in a ghetto. I didn't realize that it was a ghetto until I was getting ready to leave that little town. But let me just say, that was where I was living in the middle of isolation, like a monk for 6 years. And I would take my dogs out to the desert, and there's no trees for shade. We had Joshua trees, and it's the only place Joshua trees grow is in the Mojave Desert. So the dogs would be off leash, and we would walk, and I put my headphones in and I would dance. And if a song came in like AC/DC that was not in my favorite genre, I could feel my high self going, just let it play. Just let it play. We get so stuck that we have this box. It must be this. I only like this music. But you know what? Mm. To get out of depression, to feel real joy, you've got to get out of that box. You've got to do things that are extraordinary, different, out of the norm. And so that's what I did. I started listening to music out of the norm. And, you know, just recently I went to a Billy Idol concert all by myself in, India, which is near Palm Desert. But the dance and feeling joy is powerful, and it doesn't cost anything to dance. And it, when you feel joy, that is how you can manifest more easily. Because when you're feeling that woe is me, or that self-pity or anger or shame, whatever those low vibrations are, you're not going to be able to manifest. You've got to be at a state of love, which is, you know, if you read David R. Hawkins' book, it's 500. You have to be at a state of love or above. Joy is above love.
And yes, joy is, I mean, it took me years to connect to joy, but joy is, joy is so magical and wonderful. I think it almost was like an orgasm, I have to say, joy. And I actually was guided to dance, to listen to a certain piece of music to embody my new name, the vibrational frequencies of my new name. And as soon as I hear the music, I can feel it. It's just magical and wonderful. So I do feel that music, like you're saying, is powerful to help you embody like a new belief or the mantras or new way of being or new state.
And dance, moving our bodies. Well, you know, we have Kundalini. And when we move our body, move our hips, and we can pump that, you know, that Kundalini up into our bodies, into our heart, and get it to flow, you know, that's where enlightenment happens. So there are lots of different ways. I got to self-love and enlightenment just happened. There are a lot of different ways. All roads lead to Rome. They all lead to the same place. But I just want to say, I can't find it anymore, but there was a monk in India, I forgot to just mention this, he masturbated into enlightenment, that he raised his Kundalini enough.
It's to masturbate.
Yes. So the Kundalini will rise with the sexual energy being awakened and rising. So the dance will help to move your Kundalini energy. And breath, of course, when you're dancing, you've got to breathe. So you'll move that energy through your body. You'll start feeling better. And I want to talk again about breath, because we started with depression and anxiety. And the vagus nerve begins on the left side of the brain. And it goes down the neck, all the way down the left, and down into the heart, and then into the lungs, and then into the stomach and the liver, and it goes through all the adrenals and into the intestines. It is the longest nerve that the human body has in it. And what does it take to ignite the vagus nerve? It is breath, oxygenation. Sleeping on your right side will do it too. There are a couple of other things, but the breath is the most powerful. And if you breathe deeply, you will release anxiety and depression.
Yes, I completely agree to when you breathe deeply, because I remember when I was younger, I used to breathe through my neck. I didn't even know you could breathe through your neck, and used to hold my breath because I used to feel anxious. And so I've learned so much about the breath, and it's given me more insights about the breath, because that's so important.
It's very important. And when you think about it, you know, it breath does happen on the unconscious level. It is an autonomic nervous system activity, not something that we consciously do. However, if we are filled with self-hatred, if we don't love ourselves, if we don't love our body, then, you know, like I said earlier, we're not affirming life, we're not breathing deeply. And so we've got to then consciously get ourselves to be breathing deeply.
Oh, this is so wonderful. I could talk to you forever, Jennifer. I feel like it's been so, so rich. I feel like it's been a deep divine transmission from you, from your heart to all our hearts. And it feels like it's been like, I love that you've got the attention deficit, because I think what it does is it's created mini workshops on the show. That's what I feel like we're going on to the workshop about breath, or we're going to be talking about it. It's actually felt like mini workshops that have been very rich with this divine wisdom and all these beautiful gifts. And I want to thank you so much for really sharing so openly and so deeply and beautifully from your heart, and also injecting humor as well, because you were so open and vulnerable. And also I could feel the power in your voice and your energy and the strong belief that you have in everything you teach and embody, that I felt guided to share things that I probably may not have always sort of shared. So I feel it's been a very, very rich show. I want to thank you so much, Jennifer.
Oh, thank you. I've enjoyed it immensely. Thank you.
It's just been wonderful. And thank you to all our listeners. And may you all be inspired to by Jennifer, by her beautiful words. And Jennifer's going to be on our show on Thursday, and she's going to be showing you how to create a magical life. And I can just hear the magic in your voice, and it's like, I completely believe that you've created a magical life, because you have experienced so many different traumas and illnesses, and you have so much life experience, but you've experienced so much and you've learned from it, and, you know, you've embodied those lessons and those gifts. And now that's, you know, you've created, you know, how to create a magical life. And I think that just be really beautiful and powerful. I'm looking forward to you sharing more about your work and how to do that as well. So thank you so much, and thank you to all our listeners.
Thank you.
Many blessings and love to you and to our listeners.